What are we starting with this week? That's staying in. No, what are we starting with this week?
A wee review.
No, we're starting with a little thanks to our patrons. I know we did it last week, but let's
We did it last week.
I know we did it last week, but we're doing it again.
Sir, you cannot do this. I try to keep track of what we're doing so I can be right. And you can't just throw curveballs at me like this.
I'm throwing a curveball. And the reason I'm throwing a curveball is because this episode that we're about to listen to and do, well, we're not listening to it. People are about to listen to it. This episode was suggested by a patron.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
So before we get into the show, I do want to just ask everyone that's listening, do you believe in reincarnation? Let us know in the comments. Shall we start the show?
I've not considered it. Yeah, let's start the show.
Every week we do this. We don't answer the question.
I answer it anyway.
No.
I never listen.
Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Gutford.
Hello there.
This week, we're talking about past lives.
Ooh, hence the reincarnation.
Yeah.
What were you in a past life?
Happier.
And based on the fact that you don't believe in past lives, that's really funny.
How telling.
Non-existence, the sweetest kind of existence. So this episode was suggested by a patron, as I said, Finn TZ. You can join our Boaty McBoatface tier on Patreon if you want to suggest an episode topic that we have to do. We have to do it. You can make any topic and we'll do it.
Yeah, believe me. We have to do it. Corey would not have chosen this episode. If you ever want proof that we have to do it, this episode is the proof.
That's
but
not true.
Fintizy, I'm very happy and excited about your suggestion. So
whoa, okay, hold on. Let's right, I'm going to reclaim this narrative. No, the reason that I said, oh man, this is a tough one, is because trying to find science on past lives is very difficult.
Limited. Because scientists just won't touch it because they don't want to.
Yeah. Well, they weren't scientists in their past lives. They have no one to talk to.
That's true.
All right, let's just start this. I'm going to be taking most of this from a 2008 review and a 2021 review. A review being a science paper that talks about other science papers. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be taking most of the information from that with some more specific papers thrown in here and there. Now, I don't think that past lives are necessarily true. I don't know, and I can't prove that they are, but... The burden of proof is okay. So the burden of proof is not on me to prove that they're not true. The burden of proof is on whoever is saying past lives exist to prove that they exist, right? Beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure. I could make an opposite argument, but sure.
Also, here's the thing: we don't have any evidence for past lives, and if you're going to make that claim, you need to have the evidence to back that claim up, right? And one thing I want to point out now is Occam's razor. So people often misquote Occam's razor as saying the simplest explanation is most likely to be true. If that were the case, then creation is a much simpler, you know, it's a much simpler explanation than evolution, right? Mm. Someone just made everything rather than, oh, something's evolved complexly over a period of, blah, it's too much. It's too complex. No. Simplest explanation is true. That's not Occam's razor. Occam's razor actually states something more along the lines of the idea that requires the fewest assumptions, right?
Yeah.
So,
right.
Evolution requires fairly, like, relatively far fewer assumptions than creationism. Creationism requires the assumption that there is a God. You know, well, first off, you need to assume that a God can exist. Then you need to assume that there is a God. Then you need to assume that a God would want to create stuff, and then that God could create stuff. All of that to explain this. Whereas evolution is built on much fewer assumptions, and is can be proven through evidence and is predictable. Right? Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah,
cool. Okay, great. And so if we look at recent data, apparently quite a lot of people in the world believe in the afterlife. So Mexicans, there's 76% of Mexicans believe in the afterlife, wow. 73% of South Africans, 72% of Canadians, 65% of Indians, 98% of Iranians, jeez, 51% of Japanese people, and that includes 46 to 60% of those with no religious affiliations believe in some kind of afterlife.
Wow.
That is a lot more than I was expecting.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
But then, apparently we've not looked into what correlates to these beliefs in the afterlife, whether there's some relation with mental health or quality of life that, you know, relates to how how likely people are to believe in the afterlife. But yeah, no, it is interesting that people with no religion or affiliation to a specific religion will believe in the afterlife. Obviously, it could be spiritual and believe in reincarnation or something along those lines. But yeah, so to start off, I mentioned that I would be looking at two different reviews, one from 2008 and one from 2021. This 2021 review, so it's pretty interesting. I'm just going to start off with the numbers of sort of papers that they've got on past lives that they looked at. So they only included papers that were published in academic journals in the major mainstream scientific databases. So that's all the stuff that I sort of use. So Scopus, Web of Science, PubMed, a few other ones, okay? And they only included observational studies, case reports, case controls, cross-sectional, and cohort of spontaneous alleged past lives with no language or date limits. So they excluded reviews, books, book chapters, and studies related to non-spontaneous memories. So essentially, they got rid of anything that was sort of induced or induced by hypnosis or anything along those lines.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because if it's induced by hypnosis, it's... Okay, kind of spoiling. But if you induce it by hypnosis, there is another sort of, let's say, factor in there that could be resulting in a past life memory.
Yeah, okay.
If someone is hypnotizing you and then inducing a memory, they could just be implanting the memory, for want of a better word.
Okay. Yeah.
Whereas if it's spontaneous, then it's come from it's more reliable that it's come from the person, right?
Yeah, of course. But I mean, it would be a large task, but you could induce hypnosis in somebody, have some kind of past memory is regressed, and then you check that. Obviously, it's very difficult to check that. Neither the hypnotizer nor the person who is being hypnotized could have had any reasonable access to that piece of information, and then check if the information is correct, and then form your conclusion. Now, obviously, there's a lot of steps in there that are very difficult.
So that's absolutely entirely outside of the scope of this review. The review is just looking at sort of the numbers of papers and the sort of overall trends in those papers. Okay. And ultimately, the induced ones are very different than the spontaneous ones.
Okay.
And even so, even if a memory was induced, we'll get to it later, but ultimately inducing is, it kind of has to be separated from spontaneous ones, because there is another person involved, there is another factor involved there. And interestingly, so a majority of the past life memory investigations were performed in Asian countries. So that was 58, and then North America, there were 10. Then 2 in Europe, 1 in Africa, and 7 were across multiple different places. So like sort of multi-territories, so like including, say North America and Europe and Asia. So there was an increase in publications per decade since one of the major studies was published in the sort of 1960s. And then between the 1990s to the 2010s, most of the papers that are published were published then. That was 35. And there's been a slight decrease in the past 10 years. There's only been 50 in the past 10 years. Yeah. So that gives you sort of idea of how many of these studies there are and where they're kind of taking place. I want to tell you now about the Division of Perceptual Studies at the University of Virginia. Have you heard of it at all?
Nope.
Virginia? Never heard of Virginia?
I've heard of Virginia. Heard of Virginia. Yeah.
There's this.
The Division of Perceptual Studies.
Yes.
So is this to do with like consciousness and perception?
Well, so it used to be called something slightly different. It used to be, where is it? Parapsychology is what it used to be called. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of a consciousness. It's mostly pseudoscience sort of stuff.
Right. And it's at a university.
Yeah. So when I say mostly pseudoscience sort of stuff, I mean, it mostly studies what is often believed to be pseudoscience, as in past life science, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And the paranormal, really, more than pseudoscience.
Interesting that that's got its own division at the university. That's really interesting.
Well, there's a little story behind it. So there was a man named Dr. Ian Stevenson, who we could even do an entire episode on, to be honest. But to cut a long story short, he did some work on past life sort of studies. And he did this later in his life. He started off doing biochemistry, then he trained in psychiatry and psychoanalysis, and then he was named the chairman of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Virginia in 1957 when he was in his 30s, which was, quite a big moment. Mm. And he then sort of, the sort of scope of his study started to change. It started to shift more towards the sort of paranormal. And there came a point where he opened a sort of new department. So he stepped down as the sort of head of the department that he was in, and kind of opened a department within that department, which was studying sort of more paranormal stuff, past mm-hmm. lives, things like that. The physicist who invented the photocopier,
Xerox.
So his name was Chester Carlson. He was really interested in what Ian Stevenson was doing. So he actually started funding a lot of his work. And when he died, he left him $1 million. He left $1 million to the University of Virginia to fund Ian Stevenson's research. And so, Ian Stevenson basically used that money to travel around the globe, track down people that had reports of past lives, mostly children, by the way.
Yeah.
And so he opened the division of parapsychology at the University of Virginia, which was forced onto him. Apparently, he didn't want that name, but it was forced onto him. It was then changed to the Division of Perceptual Studies. I think there was another name in the middle. Oh yeah, there was the Division of Personality Studies, and then it changed to the Division of Perceptual Studies after that. And Ian Stevenson, he died in 2007, but I think the head of the Division of Perceptual Studies now is a man named Jim B. Tucker, who's done a lot of the sort of studies that you see recently on past lives. And yeah, so we're going to look, the other review that I was talking about, as I said, there was a review from 2008 that was done by Jim Tucker. So that was a review of the work up until that point on past lives. And like I said, he worked at the University of Virginia. He's published a lot of papers on past lives. And he has been the director of the Division of Perceptual Studies for the past 20 years or so. Past 20 years or so. And apparently he has a database full of past lives, accounts of past lives, memories. He's got 2,200 cases in that database, last he checked, apparently. And he said, this is a quote from him, "A lot of it, to be perfectly honest, is trying to figure out the answers for myself. Hopefully my work or my writings have had a positive impact on some people, but they're still trying to answer the question of what is the level of evidence that, in fact, there is a part of us that survives after the body dies." So the thing is, the subjects in most of these cases tend to be small children or young children. Mm-hmm. Actually, when this was suggested, it was specifically highlighted, you know, the past life memories involving children. And apparently over 2,500 cases have been investigated worldwide. And like I said, they happen all over the world, but they're easiest to find in cultures that believe in reincarnation for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But again, there have been a lot of cases in the West. Usually these will come on at 35 months, the age of 35 months, which is about just under 3 years old. And they will usually last until the age of about 6 or 7. And then the kids will just kind of stop talking about it and forget it, which is actually the same age that you sort of start forgetting your childhood. And you could usually remember stuff from the age of sort of 6 and 7 and up, but you can't really remember from before that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they will usually make spontaneous statements. They'll describe the lives of people that that are fairly recent. Usually they've died about 16 months before the child was born. That's sort of the,
so freaky.
So the average is about 6 months before the child is born. We'll get to why that's... I'm presenting this as factual, okay? For the purposes of this discussion, okay? We'll get to that. We'll get to it in a bit. They describe ordinary lives, usually in the same country. At the one part of the life, this is just a direct quote from the review. "The one part of the life that is also often out of the ordinary is the mode of death, as 70% of deaths are by unnatural means." I'm just going to go through the review because there's a bunch of different interesting things they bring up, which is kind of necessary to build a base on what the people studying this have, like, think about this topic, right? So essentially, they start off by talking about Ian Stevenson, the person that we were just speaking about, and a bunch of the different sort of studies that he did. And apparently he took an analytical approach to these cases and started investigating, writing things down, checking them against actual facts. So some subjects reported having been deceased family members, whereas other people said that they were strangers somewhere somewhere entirely different. And it, this is another quote from this review. It says, if they give enough details, such as the name of that location, then people have often gone there and identified a deceased individual, the previous personality, whose life appears to match the statements the child made. I really want to ask you guys a question, but okay. I have it later. Okay, the question is coming up later, but I keep on wanting to ask you now. In fact, you know, I'll ask you after the end of every section. What do you think the explanation for this is? What is the simplest explanation for this, do you guys think? Or the explanation that requires the fewest assumptions?
The kids have read this somewhere. They've read about like a newspaper article, or they've heard family members talk about other family members. Maybe.
It's kids. So before they can read, so 3 years old.
I was thinking maybe the explanations the kids were giving were so broad or vague that they could just apply it to somebody, anybody in a graveyard. Like there's got to be somebody,
yeah,
local who's died recently who fits that description.
Yeah.
So you fortune tellers.
Yeah. Have you heard of cold reading?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So cold reading is what douchebags do. I saw that fly land on my glasses. So cold reading, yeah, it's what douchebags do. Essentially, they will exploit people whose family members have died and make them think that they can contact their family members by doing this very easy to, fairly easy to learn sort of process, right? You throw out simply put, you throw out a vague sort of question to the audience, like, has anyone here lost someone? I'm feeling a sort of feminine presence. And then they'll all put their hands up. They're like, I've lost someone. It's like, I'm feeling a sort of a Penelope. Is Penelope mean anything to anyone? Oh, my cat's name is Penelope. Oh, my name is Penelope. Oh, my mother's name was Penelope. Yeah. Right? You start off really vague, and you let the other person give you more information until you can get more and more specific. And it's easier if there's a large group of people who are already, you know, sort of predisposed towards believing that you can contact the dead and are there because they want you to contact someone. And then you can say, okay, Penelope, your mother's Penelope. Okay, right. I'm guessing that I'm seeing that she died quite suddenly. It's quite an untimely, unwanted death, right? And they're like, yeah. And she's telling me the money.
Something about money.
Whenever people die, there's always money. There's always money issues, right? Yeah. So you start off vague and then let the other person give you more and more sort of information. And people will fill in the blanks for you. Kids can do this entirely unintentionally just by saying, I was a spaceman. No, that's a bit too niche. I was a fireman and I died. They go to another city.
Why
they find
they
a fireman
that
died. Because they're kids.
What?
Have you been around a five-year-old?
No, not that's claimed to be a dead fireman, no.
They probably had a dream or something.
Five-year-olds say crazy stuff, man.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just such a specific claim.
No, I mean, have you heard kids... like, when kids...
the child doesn't even know about death yet.
Citation child?
No. Yeah. But kids don't understand death, but they'll say, oh, I died. Right? Like, they don't understand the concept of death fully, but they understand that someone can die, but they don't understand necessarily that someone... like so. Bear in mind, if you're like 3 to between sort of ages of like sort of 35 months, when it's sort of the average age of onset, kids don't really know that much. They don't really understand reality in the same way that we do. They're still picking up on it. So they can just say stuff, right? They will just say stuff. But
speak your truth.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to a child playing, that came out weird. I have younger siblings. If you listen to a child playing, they just say, make stuff up. Right, they just make stuff up all the time. And it just so happens that if a kid makes... like, we don't say, oh, if a kid makes something up about being an amazing sort of chef, that you're like, oh, man, they truly know that they are an amazing chef. They know it. This mud pie they have made, it is some inbuilt, ingrained knowledge of mud pie. No, there's a kid playing. Yeah. But as soon as a kid says, oh, I'm your dad because I died and I was your daddy, like... they're like, you think, oh, wow, this is my dad reincarnated.
I've never experienced a child say something quite that creepy. I am your dead father.
there are so many reports of that. That's such a common thing.
Really?
Which is, well, because kids understand what a daddy is and what a mummy is. And they might know that, like, oh, granddad died before you were born. And they don't understand much else. They'll just say stuff. So... moving on, we'll get back to explanations in a second. So there's a section in the review on birthmarks. So this is something that Stevenson really harped on. He was like, okay, right. You can explain away kids knowing this and that. How can you explain this? Kids that say they died in a particular way, they can have birthmarks that match the scars and the harm done to the people that they said they were. It's like they've been carried over from another life. So if someone was shot through the head, they have a birthmark on their head.
Have they not just
where the gunshot wound was?
Have they not just seen their own birthmark and like made up a story about it?
Literally. Maybe. I have a scar under my arm from a surgery when I was 1.5. Had no reason to remember it. I used to tell people that I was in a sword fight.
And were you?
I thought I genuinely,
in your past life?
I genuinely specifically remember being in a gladiator sword fight, and that's how I got the scar under my arm.
Oh,
wow, Corey, we should investigate this.
No, I made it up.
Do you remember the layout of ancient Rome?
No, it was more Greek than Roman, really. But that's not the point. Look, I was a child.
Yeah, well, that's when you remember, then, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you would be.
Right. I was a child.
We should get you some hypnosis.
A child gladiator fighting another child, and the swords were like 6 feet long. I made this up.
God, they were really cruel in ancient Greece, weren't they? Making children fight.
No.
You know, now that you say it, actually. No, it definitely was Roman, because they have the funny hats.
Yeah.
Sorry, you were right first time.
Funny hats. Roman.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the only culture with funny hats.
Not sure your past commander would like you calling them funny hats, Corey.
I had no commander, Luke. I was gladiator. Anyway, wow. So yeah, the birthmarks thing, yeah, Jem, really... very astute there.
Thank you.
Kids see birthmarks and they come up with an explanation for them, right? Like, oh, I was that's how I died.
Sure.
That is the first thing I think when I read that. To me is the absolute simplest explanation, the first thing that I think when I see that.
Yeah.
And it does worry me that a man who spent his entire life studying this didn't think to be like, maybe the kids made it up. Maybe they made it up based on their birthmarks, right?
Yeah, right? It's kind of reverse causality. He's got the causality wrong there, isn't he?
Yeah, right. And if you go looking for someone that died in that specific way that a kid made up based on their birthmarks, of course you're going to find someone that died in that specific way. Yeah. He published, Stevenson published a lot of work. A 2,200-page sort of document that had over 200 of those cases in it, as well as 13, I think, as well as like a sort of shorter synopsis of that. So here are some examples for you. Let's see what you think of those. There was a girl who was born with malformed fingers who seemed to remember being a man whose fingers were cut off. And a boy who was born with stubs for fingers on his right hand who seemed to remember the life of a boy in another village who lost the fingers of his right hand in a fodder chopping machine. And there's also a story about a boy from Thailand who apparently had two birthmarks that matched with eyewitness accounts of... sort of a gunshot wound of a teacher. So this little boy said, "Oh, I used to be a teacher, and I was shot in the head, and that's how it dies. And I was in this town, and the teacher was shot in the head in that town. And the grandmother took the boy there, and the boy led the grandmother to the parents' house, you know, the parent of the teacher. And it's like, oh, these are my parents or whatever. Now, there is not. I've told you basically all the details that are there about the boy from Thailand. I don't believe it because there are so few details there, right?
He led them to the house. That's freaky. That is freaky.
Right, but we're believing that.
Yeah,
right?
Of course.
Right, if that is true, sure. That is freaky and interesting. I would wager that there is something that is not... There is enough information there. There are a lot of ways that this can be easily explained, and enough information there is left out that you could be like, okay, well, that's just... you're leaving the information out there. Like, for example... Yeah. You could very much lead the kid into doing that, right? You can sort of prompt them into being like, oh, were you shot in the head? You were a teacher. Were you from maybe like this town because you know that there's a teacher? Or you half remember that. Or the kid heard about a teacher being shot in the head a town over and said that they were that teacher, right? Yeah, that all of this makes sense. Like, kids listen. My brother would do this thing where he would bring up something you were talking about like 3 months ago.
Yes.
As though it had just been mentioned, and you're like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You said that." I'm like, "Yes, 3 months ago, and you weren't we did not say it to you. Were you listening to our conversations and just
storing them for later?"
Yeah, kids listen when you don't think they're listening, and they remember stuff that you don't think they should remember. Yeah, it's like it's freaky as
weird
hell.
Thing.
Yeah, freaky. So, like, you know, sort of simpler explanation, fewer assumptions there, right? That there's sort of confirmation bias, that the child was sort of led into it unintentionally. Clever hands effect. Yeah.
Yes.
We've spoken about that before.
Yeah.
These are all things that we know can happen with people. So it takes fewer assumptions to believe, well, it's probably that, rather than be like, okay, now we need to come up with a framework for how reincarnation works. and make the assumption that all of that is true. It's when true, yeah. There's this other slightly more sort of likely one to the other side. Yeah. So what do you think about the girl with the malformed fingers and the boy with the malformed fingers who thought that they were that they thought they had their fingers cut off in a past life?
I feel like they were just curious about why they're different. They just go, my hand's different from everyone else's. Why is that? And they just thought about stories.
Yeah.
That could make sense.
Right?
Yeah.
What do you, you seem to disagree, Luke.
No, I don't disagree. I just don't know. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I find it weird that this child knew what like a rotary saw was.
They didn't.
Okay.
They just knew that they're... Maybe he did. But the again, this it's in a village, a town over, so... A kid could not, like, oh, I got my kid.
And was that true?
Yeah.
Was that true that there was a kid?
There was a boy, yeah.
Right.
Oh, wait, no, hold on. No, it doesn't say whether it's true or not, sorry.
Ah.
But the thing is that...
That's the crucial information there.
Yeah, no, actually, it is.
And they went to the town and there weren't even any sores.
No, but the thing is...
we don't believe
in them. A common item that a kid would know about because it exists in their town, yeah. Right? Like, oh, I was a boy and I was working and I got my fingers cut off. Oh, you mean you got your fingers cut off in a saw? Yeah.
This type of saw?
Yeah. But
well,
like
sure.
Or I was working and I got my fingers cut off and you go to a town over and there was someone with their fingers cut off.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, if there's a fucking saw that children are working with in a town, like
someone's
gonna get their fingers cut off.
Yeah,
right.
Of course. But I don't necessarily believe in this, but I do find it very fun. But also you're talking about like assumptions. Hey, it's good fun.
It is quite fun.
But you are talking about assumptions, but you are assuming, like, to make this make sense in a materialist plane, you are going, oh, but perhaps this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened, and that makes sense.
Let's see, you're misrepresenting the assumptions that are being made. So what I'm saying...
I know what you mean. You're saying that those are phenomena we see in people. We know them to be true. We know confirmation bias, etc. But you're assuming those things did happen in order to discount the a possibility which you don't believe in, which is fine, but that is, you are trying to reach the conclusion you want to come to.
No, what is happening is there is limited information being given.
Yeah.
And the information is being limited in such a way to reach one conclusion. And I am saying, well, if we are to fill in the blanks of the information that is left out with the most likely thing.
With a possible thing, yes.
The most likely. Possible and most likely.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Most likely in your opinion, yeah.
Jump in.
I have nothing to add.
No, you got... Come on.
I just mean you're filling them in with what you call the most likely thing because you categorically don't believe it to be true. And
I'm not saying that I don't believe in past lives. What I'm saying is...
But you did say that earlier in the show.
Based on this evidence, I don't.
Right.
I don't discount it.
Yeah.
But I think this evidence is mostly bullshit. In the same sense that someone could say, oh, vaccines are unsafe because they give you autism. And I would say, no, that's bullshit. But if someone told me, oh, actually, this batch of vaccines has X, Y, Z, I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that makes sense. Right? Like, I can disagree with the way that you got to a conclusion while still saying, oh, the conclusion is perfectly possible.
Right.
I disagree with the route that this is taking because they have come up. You'll see it later on, right? But the neutral point here is not believing in reincarnation. Is my point?
Yeah, no, I understand that.
And so you need to like the fact that information is being left out. You need to you can either fill in the information as they are doing with the fantastical belief of reincarnation, or with the much more grounded and objectively, Luke, much more likely.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh my god.
I agree that it's much more likely in that we have no proof of the magical belief of reincarnation. Sure.
Jamp, roll the tape, please. Can you just...
No. I agree with you that it is much more likely if what we assume to be true, which is that we live in a material-based reality, is true. That's true.
Yeah.
And based on the assumption, the presuppositions of the scientific... model of the world, I agree that it's more likely, assuming the scientific model of the world is correct, which is an assumption.
Yeah, I'm not denying that.
And so once when operating within the world, within that sort of axiom, those set of axioms, then yes, the most likely outcome is that, yes.
Right, but the reason that we're making that assumption is because it requires the few assumptions to get to.
Well, it assumes quite a lot, but sure.
It does, but it... I mean, the point is that it's reliable and it's reliable and predictable. Whereas we'll see later on, this is less so, right?
It allows you to make predictions about the future. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. The scientific. Yeah. So the reason that we make the assumption about this about science is because as Luke says, it allows us to make predictions about the future.
Yeah.
And the past, but that is why I'm going with this and not the other one. It's so difficult.
I know. Hey, but this is exactly what you want me to be.
No,
I know you don't like it, but this is exactly what... I don't believe you went into this episode being like, I really hope Luke just doesn't make any comments here. I really hope he just sits and listens. I don't believe... You can feign all your frustration all you like, but I don't believe you went into this episode being like, I can't wait for Luke to just sit and accept everything.
Look, just because I knew it was going to happen and I thought I knew it would make better content, it doesn't mean that I'm not actually frustrated. I contain multitudes. So, no. So that is there with the sort of remembering injuries or sort of birthmarks or it says birth defects here. I don't really think that's the best term. Birthmarks and things like that, right? That they could match the supposed lives of the children that they remember. Mm-hmm. So there's also a part that talks about the strength of memories and emotions. So I'm just going to read this because I find it interesting. Some make their statements with detachment, but many show strong emotional involvement in their claims. Some cry and beg to be taken to what they say is their previous family. Others show intense anger, particularly towards killers in cases which the previous personality was murdered. In general, the stronger the evidence for a connection to the previous life, the more emotion the child shows when talking about that life. Even when the children do show strong emotion, many of them show great intensity one moment, followed by ordinary play a few minutes later. Many seem to need to be in a certain frame of mind to access the memories, and although some are able to recall them on demand, others are not. This, to me, says the kids are kind of making it up sometimes, and some kids can feel very strongly about it and then just not care about it.
Yeah.
To me, that says they're playing. There could be another explanation for it. There could be. It seems the most likely is that the kids are playing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what you think. I like what is it, the interesting part to me here is that apparently the stronger the evidence for the connection to a previous life, the more emotion the child shows when talking about that life. The reason that I'm going to come up with other assumptions here, by the way, Luke, is not because I'm saying, oh, it's absolutely not true. I just know that when people hear something like this, it is very easy to think, oh, so that means it must be true because the stronger the emotional connection, like the more evidence there is. And I'm just saying, here's an alternate way of viewing it that seems that could potentially be more likely. For example, stronger emotion related to it and more evidence related to it. If there's more evidence, it's probably spoken about more in the kid with the kid, and the kid starts to sort of internalize that memory as mm-hmm. being true mm-hmm. rather than just play. Because again, as we were talking about, kids at that age aren't very good at discerning sort of reality from fiction.
Could it be similar to like imaginary friends, where kids form emotional attachments to their imaginary friends? That don't exist, but then people talk to the kids about their imaginary friends as if the imaginary friend is real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of that situation.
Is what you're saying, the stronger the evidence for the stronger the supposed evidence for the past life, i.e. they found some person in the neighboring town who kind of matches the description, mm-hmm. the parents are then going to have been more likely to ask the kids more often about mm-hmm. it, which is going to strengthen it. And so when the scientist comes along or when this guy comes along and questions them about it, that memory and that sort of thing is going to be more hardwired into their brain, so they're going to show stronger emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, but this says generally, and again, there's no numbers here. It's just,
it'd be interesting to know if there was any information, or if this person had gathered any information on whether how frequently the parents report questioning the child about it.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to go through. I do want to go through the history of this with Ian Stevenson's work. It's just outside the scope of this episode, but I would like to look at that because it does look interesting. And also, I do want to pick at it.
When was this report done?
This review was done in 2008 of the previous work.
Right. When's the previous work done? Sorry.
From the 60s onwards.
Okay. It's just frustratingly. It's just, the data is poor in terms of the collection of the data. It's like, it doesn't go like, how could, for example, the explanation Corey's given, how could you make a rational explanation of this that doesn't require the magical belief? Right, then let's gather data to test that hypothesis.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to do that. It just goes, here's a bunch of stuff that's got loads of holes. Have fun in 60 years from now, Corey.
you have right now, in that moment, given more scrutiny to the ideas than many of the people that are studying this give in their scientific papers, which...
Well, they're scientists.
Which is frustrating to me. Which is frustrating to me, because you can't just... If you're... As a scientist, you can't just think... Oh, my idea is true. So my idea might be true. So I need to find things that corroborate with that. You need to actively try and disprove what you believe to be true.
Yeah.
Physicists are very good at doing that all the time.
Yeah.
In fact, I feel like physicists are the ones that very much like sort of they're like, oh, maybe it's this. Oh, wait, no, that's not it. Maybe it's this though. No, that's definitely not it. Cause like I think it's much easier as a physicist to prove yourself wrong than say,
oh yeah,
a psychologist or
a biologist
or. I mean, chemist is maybe a little bit easier.
Not as easy as physics.
But you need
this giant equipment to do as a physicist. You need like billions of pounds.
I'm not saying that physicists have it easier. I'm just saying that, look, dealing with a particle that can't lie to you is much better than dealing with a person. Okay? Mm. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Because particles can't, well, neutrinos can, but that's different.
Those bloody liars.
They lied. They said they moved faster than light, but they didn't.
Well, no, I don't think the neutrinos lied.
I know they didn't. I know they didn't lie.
Just hear them giggling on the
way. Hey, no, what is it? Dual slit experiment. Particles can lie. So
true. Well, they can change their mind.
They can't lie. They can just change their mind backwards through time.
Retroactively.
Look, what is that if not lying?
That's not lying.
That is lying using time travel, okay? That's lying with extra steps.
Not if you're a timeless particle, it's not.
No, you know what it is? It's gaslighting. No, I was always this.
Very good.
Write a paper.
So that's, you said imaginary friends earlier, Jeff. That's really interesting because we do have that coming up in a bit.
Ooh.
But just first, before we get into that, I want to talk about likes and dislikes, because this is another section from the review. Apparently, some subjects, this is a quote, some subjects display likes and dislikes that are similar to those of a previous personality. For example, so it gives an example here of 24 cases of Burmese children who said that they were Japanese soldiers during World War II, and some of them complained about spicy Burmese food and asked for raw fish instead. And also, some subjects showed an unfortunate interest in addictive substances such as alcohol and tobacco if the previous personality consumed them, including one whose neighbor obliged the young boy's request for alcohol until his grandmother intervened. I have been around children. I have multiple younger siblings. They ask for booze all the time. They want
it. What children are you spending time? I have a cousin who is a little Scottish child.
She
has never said something weird like, I used to be a farmer, but my head got bitten off by a bull. Or like, I need to smoke some tobacco or give me alcohol.
If a kid sees an adult drinking something, they say, I want it. The adult says, no, it's for adults. Okay. The kid says, give it to me. I want the wine. Give it me some of the wine. Kids will just want that stuff. If a kid sees someone smoking, they're like, what is that? I want to do it too. Because kids
True. Also, kids struggling with spicy food isn't surprising.
Right? Like, it's so strange. These children didn't want spicy Burmese food, even though they're Burmese.
So strange.
They wanted some sushi. Well, I want some sushi.
Yeah.
Does that make me Japanese in the past?
We've already covered, Corey, that you did have a past life as a Roman, so... I don't know if they
a
had
Japanese
spicy
Roman
food.
Is it a Japanese?
A Japanese Roman.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Is that what you remember?
Yes, sure.
That's really interesting.
And apparently children often engage in play, another quote, children often engage in play that appears to be connected to their past life reports, particularly play that involves the occupation of the previous personality. Again, to me, this says less kids are playing because they remember their past lives and more... Kids say they were a fireman because they like playing fireman.
That's definitely tenuous.
Right?
I was a pilot in a past life. No. Wow, it's because of your past life. No, it's because you like being
but
a
also,
plane.
What's interesting to me is that you only remember one life over. Do you know what if you, why wouldn't you remember the memories of a past life? You know, so.
Too hazy.
It's like a JPEG. Yeah. It's just like JPEG compression.
Save the
right?
Same JPEG 20 times. Not a good JPEG anymore.
But what if, no, that doesn't make sense, because with the likes and dislikes, right? So if you're a little Burmese kid and you like raw fish because you used to be Japanese, which makes complete sense, then if you were to then be reborn, would you not then like raw fish because you liked it in a past life, but you were Burmese, so it doesn't make any sense?
Yeah, would you suddenly develop a love for Burmese food as like reincarnation regret?
Is a reincarnation racist? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I don't know, Corey, we'd have to, I mean, like, well, yeah. Maybe you were Japanese Roman because you were Japanese before you were Roman.
Right. So in cases
your
in which
life in Rome.
Okay. So wow. This is interesting because they've done some work on. So Ian Stevenson also did some work on gender identity disorder, as it was called then. Obviously, gender dysphoria now. And there's also been some recent work on this. I didn't have a chance to look through it fully, but one of the ideas is that can you guess how gender dysphoria and past lives can come into play?
A trans people other genders in past lives.
Sometimes, maybe.
Wow.
But the cross-gender behavior may continue even into adulthood, but overall, most of the subjects go on to lead perfectly normal lives as not trans people. That was implicit there.
Okay.
Trans people don't live normal lives, as we know.
Yes.
This was from 2008. I shouldn't be too mean. It was from 2008. Okay. But... there's an idea that apparently gender dysphoria can be caused by being whatever in a past life, which why is trans race not a thing then, right? You know, like, why do we not have, I feel like a white man. I used to be a racist white man, and this is why I hate this disgusting black body I'm in, right? Like, why is that not a thing?
It might be.
Is that where internalized racism comes
Maybe.
From?
Maybe.
There we go.
Maybe.
Sure. We've cracked the case.
That's it.
So when the memories leave, it's usually around about the age of six. They stop, six or seven, they stop making those statements. And it's also the same time that they start going to school and they have more experiences.
And they
start
to educate out them by the establishment.
Yes. That's and they it. Also start to forget their childhood. But apparently it can be longer in cases which the personality has been identified, as contact between the two families appears to keep them going longer. Again, to me, that doesn't mean, contact makes the memories grow stronger. It's just, if they're false memories, they're going to be implanted more easily if you keep contact with the old family.
Yeah, if you keep reinforcing them.
Yeah, you keep reinforcing them, exactly. If you want to know more about false memories, we did an episode on the Berenstain Bears effect, which you should go and listen to. Yeah.
78.
Corey once told me a very interesting thing about memory, which blew my flipping mind.
Guys, it was on the Mandela effect. That was a little joke for me. I'm sorry. I couldn't let it go. Please continue.
I couldn't remember. So Corey once said this really interesting thing to me about memory, which blew my mind. So I had this experience where I was like meditating on the tube. And I came out of my meditation and I had seen a countdown timer for my meditation countdown in my meditation, right? So I came out of my meditation and I was like, wow, for the 10 seconds before my alarm went off, I saw this like 10, 9. And I was like looking at it. I was like, oh, that's my meditation timer. Bing, my meditation timer goes off. And I'm recounting this story to Corey. And that is what I remember. But of course, when I remember it, that's happening now. Right. And so, you know, I could swear that that's what I remember. And very possibly in some weird, like pseudoscientific, metaphysical explanation for that, whatever, very possible. That's how it felt at the time, right? When I was recounting this to Corey. But then it could also be that my brain rewrote the previous 10 seconds before my timer went off. And I wouldn't know the difference because everything I'm remembering is an experience that is happening right now. It's not necessarily a reliable memory of the past. And that's just so freaky. It's so freaky.
Oh yeah, it's horrible. I hate it.
Yeah.
You like literally, it's like the solipsistic worldview. It's kind of solipsistic worldview, but basically that you are a brain and that all that exists is the brain, but the brain is being spontaneously created right now. If you were spontaneously created right now with all your memories, you would swear that those memories happened. But I could have just blown into existence right now.
It's like it's like when you're in a video game, right? You're playing a video game. You walk around, and if it's a newer video game, right? The sort of Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
You walk into a new area. It feels like that area has always existed.
Yeah.
That area was generated when you walked into it.
That's true.
And you don't know the difference, right?
Yeah.
So long as the lag isn't too much, and so long as like you know it's running fast enough, you would not know that things are being loaded shortly before you see them.
Yeah.
And it could be like, it's the exact same thing as sort of memory thing you're saying there.
Have you had an experience where you are falling asleep, you close your eyes and immediately open them and it's like 8 hours later?
Yeah.
It, like in your head, it feels like 10 seconds
passed.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
But you've had a full 8 hours sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds kind of like that where your brain just rewrites and goes, yeah, you falling asleep. That happened like 10 seconds ago, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
So here's reincarnation as an explanation is the heading of this little section. It's a quote here from Ian Stevenson, who did a lot of the work on this. He said, "Reincarnation is the best, even though not the only explanation for the stronger cases we have investigated. I disagree with that. He's a dead man. I can say what I want. Disagree with you. Or maybe he's not anymore. Maybe he's been reincarnated. He's
somewhere.
Yeah. Into someone that was born in like 2007. Now, I mean, we've been through this already, right? I don't think that reincarnation is necessarily the best for the strongest cases. So let's look at Ryan Hammonds, right? I'm just going to give you two case studies, then we can go on to some more stuff. There's some interesting stuff going on. So Ryan Hammonds had nightmares at 4 years old about his heart exploding. And he also thought that he was someone from Hollywood. And there were some links between, you know, what he said and someone else. So there's a man, we spoke about this guy, Jim Tucker. That's it. So Jim Tucker was looking into sort of different people with sort of past lives experiences. And Ryan Hammonds, a 4 year old, had this sort of past life memory. He was like, you know, he would wake up in the middle of the night screaming about his heart exploding, all this sort of stuff. And on looking into it, they found out that, that was a man named, Marty Martin. Who died in 1964. And actually, Ryan's mum showed him a picture of this guy. And he was like, that was me. I remember the guy that he's standing with. And that's me right there. And this was sort of, before they knew who Marty Martin was. They sort of managed to track it down who he was after him seeing that picture and pointing it out and being like, that was me. And he also said that he lived somewhere with Rock in the name. It was like Rock or Mount in the name. Mm. And Marty Martin lived on Roxbury Avenue.
Oh.
ROX. Roxbury Avenue.
Still close.
Still,
yeah.
So Ryan sort of managed to pick out Martin's wife in a picture. And he said that she looked familiar, but he wasn't sure how he knew her. And then they flew to Los Angeles. Jim Tucker and Ryan flew to Los Angeles to meet Martin's daughter, who was 8 years old when her dad died. And Ryan apparently was confused to find out that she'd grown. He was like, "What? You're so old. What has happened? I remember you being a little 8-year-old girl." And Tucker started fact-checking some of Ryan's memories with Martin's daughter. And this is a quote from the Vice article, which I think talks about Jim Tucker and talks about some of his work. Direct quote. "A lot of the details proved accurate. A lot of them did not. Some couldn't be verified." So some of the things that proved to be accurate. So he said that he was dancing on Broadway, which seemed unlikely because the guy was just an extra, but it turned out to be true. He also said that he had two sisters and a mother with curly brown hair, which was true. And he remembered his address, which I told you, having Rock or Mountain in the name, Roxbury. Now, his heart hadn't exploded. Martin had leukemia and died of a brain hemorrhage in 1964. And Ryan also said that his dad raised corn and he died when he was still a child, which wasn't true. But it then goes on to say, "Still, the case presented strong evidence for reincarnation," Tucker wrote in his 2013 book, Return to Life, in which he documented this story, but it was certainly not definitive. Here's the thing.
I say it could be multiple past lives getting jumbled up.
Nah, here's the thing, right?
That seems more likely to me. That's it. Yeah.
If the kid
gets, like a scientist.
If the kid gets the mode of death wrong, it's not strong evidence. The kids, like, "Oh, I remember curly hair, I remember this and that." If they're getting major details, like, if it's like 50-50, come on. Are you sure you're not, like, adding a little bit more into that than is there? Mm. If that's my issue. If the best evidence for this is still so weak, it just feels a little bit like...
Freaky that he remembers performing on Broadway, though. Sorry, not remembers. Freaky that he got that correct about performing on Broadway. That is very specific.
Oh, it's incredibly unlikely. Like, it's shocking that he managed to get so much right.
I guess we need to know how many kids are going through this process who get everything entirely wrong.
Well, if he's, yeah.
Because obviously you're going to get some kids who happen to get things right.
Well, if he's got 2,200 cases on in his database and like the best one, one of the best ones has 50% of the stuff wrong.
You've got a really obscure thing.
Wrong evidence for reincarnation.
All right. And look, Jim Tucker is doing, like, I don't want, the work that he does is important, right? To some degree. I would definitely say. No, genuinely. I genuinely think the work that he does is important. I just think that the people that do this work should, I think other people agree as well, that they should maybe be a little more critical of the conclusions that they're coming to. It feels like they're very much starting off with the assumption, under the assumption that reincarnation is real, and then looking for evidence that supports that, rather than looking at it and trying to disprove it. Right.
Thing is, it's weird about this as well is that it's not, none of this is trying to prove whether reincarnation is true or not. What it is specifically trying to prove is whether there is reincarnation with memory retained during different lives. Yeah. That's a very specific thing, and not at all, like, because the thing is, they could be completely wrong about everything they're trying to do, and reincarnation could still be a thing, regardless of memory retention.
Like, we have spoken about this so many times that this is why I hate conspiracy theories. And this kind of delves into conspiracy, like all sort of pseudoscience, that whole sort of similar idea. This is why I hate conspiracy theories, because they could be right.
And yeah, they could be.
Like, you know, like I always say, like I always say this, like, you are, like, I don't care if you're right or wrong, the way that you've gotten to your conclusion is not sound. I will not believe it until there is evidence. And even when, if evidence comes out and you're like, oh, I told you so, no, you didn't. I could say the moon is made of cheese in the very center. There's this, the center of the moon is made of cheese, right?
Just a little bit in the middle.
Because President Obama put it there to distract people from the migrants. I don't know. I can make something up, right?
Yeah.
And
is that true?
Stop it.
I know it is, you know.
And yeah, one day, at some, and one day at some point, right, the you could find that the center of the moon is made of cheese, and I'd be like, haha, you see, I was right. And you could be like, well, no, shut up. No, you weren't. You were crazy. That is crazy. You just managed to get one thing right.
Yeah. You know, if that's true, actually, that suggests that the moon is actually a big protection disc for the cheese in the middle. Mm. It's actually some really important cheese, and it's so important. It's got an entire moon protecting
world biggest moon. Baby bell.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so it's a worst
daddy bell.
World's biggest baby bell with even bigger, like, skin.
Yeah, that's the worst part of the baby bell.
Exactly.
Tastes horrible.
It's actually just one baby bell in the center of the moon.
Uh-huh. Well worth it, Jeb. Always got to do anything to get that baby bell. Yeah. Is that the ad? Pay us.
We're all vegan.
I don't care.
Don't be pushing baby bells.
Vegan baby bells might be.
Hey, people watching aren't necessarily vegan. They'll have baby bells, won't they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't say that. Baby Bell will hear you, Luke. Okay. Just keep on the DL.
Okay. We've got to get some money. Baby Bell, pay us and we'll donate it to an animal charity.
Or you can join our Patreon, patreon.com/SciGuys, and we won't have to sell out our beliefs to Baby Bell.
Can we make a new Baby Bell tier on Patreon?
No.
Okay.
Ooh, the Baby Bells.
No. Why? Okay. We'll think about it. Okay. So. Yeah, like, this is the thing. Like, people that believe in conspiracy theories, things like this, if they do turn out to be right, it is entirely for the wrong reasons. And so what is the point of being right if you just take a random guess, you know?
Yeah.
And just so happen to be correct. It's much better to be correct through evidence and proving it. Because for the person to end up being correct, to be proven right, someone needs to prove it. And that person is the one that's done the work. The other person just said something, believed it in face of, you know, in spite of all evidence against it, until they ended up being right. It's not quite the same thing. So there's also a case that I'm going to ignore and skip over for now.
Just fun.
Basically, there was this woman that claimed to have a past life as an Irish person in the 19th century.
Oh.
And she even published a book. And she started using an Irish accent.
Transracial.
No.
She's literally transracial.
Trans accent.
So,
well, she's either transracial or
transnational.
Reincarnation is real. Pick your battles, Corey.
So she was hypnotized, and then she remembered the sort of Irish history, and then she started using an Irish accent, all this stuff. She was like, oh, I used to be Irish in the 19th century, but then I died, blah, blah, blah. And she wrote a book and everything, and then journalists started to investigate it, and it all turned out to be false. The name that she made up was like, no one existed. The husband that apparently she had didn't exist. None of these people existed. She got general details about Ireland right, despite having never been there. Turns out she had an Irish nanny as a kid.
Of course.
That's where she got the Irish accent from, and the general details about Ireland. Most people don't think that she just made it up. Most people think that it was an induced false memory from the hypnosis that she just believed was true, to the point where she was like, oh my god, this is actually true. But ultimately she just didn't remember that it happened when it came from the fact that she had an Irish nanny as a kid. So that's one thing to bear in mind. So coming back to this 2021 review, so here's just the just back to the conclusion of it, right? What is interesting is stuff that we've been talking about already. So I'm just going to go to the conclusion of that 2021 review that I spoke about, because it's pretty good. Basically it says that in future, when we're doing studies on this, we should be looking all around the world, because it's something that it's been sort of sort of documented around the world. And this is the thing. It says following a metal, you need to follow a methodological standard and try to overcome possible limitations such as linguistic barriers during interviews and the limited investigations regarding adults who claim to or claim to have had past life memories. So essentially what that means is that there's no standard for how we do these studies. We just kind of do them ad hoc, which makes them difficult to compare, which makes it difficult to put all the data together. So there needs to be some kind of standard for how these studies are conducted. Mm-hmm. Also goes on to say that the falsifiability of claimed past lives memories must always be considered, and future studies should always consider a socio-psychological hypothesis for past lives memories. In other words, researchers have to consider possible associations between these alleged memories and cultural variables such as religious or spiritual aspects, general beliefs, children's imagination / fantasy, and probably different levels of socio-political allowance for sharing or even publishing information on observed cases. So essentially, what they're saying here is they need to scrutinize more the reasons behind these potential memories that you know could be related to religion or look at it more on a case by case basis of what's going on in that country, right? Because there could be many factors that are affecting that. Interesting that they mentioned children's imagination in play, because that to me seems to be the most obvious sort of, is this not just kids playing and people that aren't kids taking them at their word and taking them seriously when they're just playing? So I also wanted to talk about past life regression therapy, which is pseudoscience. Don't ever do it. It is bunk. It can help you, but in the same way that a placebo could help you. There is no methodological data that supports this. So past life regression therapy is essentially a sort of kind of hypnotherapy that is supposed to take you into past lives to resolve current trauma. The idea is that mental illnesses and whatnot can be caused by unresolved trauma from a past life. And so by delving into that past life and confronting the trauma head on, you can deal with it. The Hypnotherapy Practice Edinburgh, because hypnotherapy is a thing, Hypnotherapy Practice Edinburgh has a little page that says why it's a waste of money. Basically, again, it just says that there's no evidence to support it. If you're talking about therapy, you want to take an evidence-based approach. There is no evidence to say how it works or that it works consistently. Basically, if you believe that it's going to work, it can work. But there's also the worry that it can induce and implant a false memory, which can cause further distress. Which is why, Luke, when I said it back at the start, that they don't use induced ones, because it's false memory. They can just implant a false memory in your brain. You can just induce a false memory by hypnotizing someone. And again, when you said, oh, well, what if both the sort of person that had the memory and the person that was sort of inducing the memory couldn't know that information that was sort of said, the reason that's not included is because you can come up with any sort of vague information and be somewhat right about it, you know?
Oh, of course. But I mean, in order to, like, as you say, the burden of proof is on the person making the claim, you would only consider it proven if the information was specific enough beyond reasonable doubt that it's not. Yeah, it would have to be like, I remember the number plate of my car. I remember which house number I lived at and which address in which country and what the name of my husband was and et cetera, et cetera.
Name, number plate, house. Yeah, all of that sort of stuff. Because the thing is, people will be like, oh, my, like, I remember my car plate, my Reggie plate on my car was this. And then you find someone that has that. Mm. Really, like, oh, they died.
Man, people don't usually do that.
It's like, there are like 7 billion people on this planet. And there's one dying every, like, I don't know, what, 10 seconds or something? I don't know how often people die.
But I feel like you could do some statistical analysis on how likely it would be. There is a letter for this in science, I think, about, like, for proof, how likely it is that a piece of evidence proves the hypothesis greater than random. I can't remember it, P or T or something like that. Even if people are remembering fragments of information, like, I remember my number plate had these letters in it, you know, and obviously, you know, 7 billion people in the world, someone's going to have that number plate. But then if you can take into account, you know, if they have these letters in the number plate and they correctly got this number of house and in a street with this name and with a partner with this name and this many children, and, like, it starts becoming more statistically unlikely that it's made up.
Here's the thing, though. No one is keeping this down. There's not sort of, you know, what? I mean, I guess, What's the opposite of reincarnation? Big death. There's no big death out there saying, ooh, trying to keep reincarnation down, you know? There's not really a group out there, as far as we're aware, that are trying to stop people from believing in reincarnation.
Yeah.
So it's not like any stories of someone who remembers in exquisite detail a past life is being suppressed.
Yeah.
The best stories are the ones that we have heard of, right? The best recorded stories we have heard of. And the best recorded stories are not that great. Let's be the best
50% success rate.
Right, yeah, no, the best recorded stories that we've heard of are not very specific, and you can always find a little sort of way to niggle in there and be like, "Oh, that's probably not true," right?
I agree with you that there is not some, you know, big death conspiracy that is trying to silence any evidence of reincarnation. But I do think that the current era we're living through, which is a materialist era, not only in our science, but also in our economic system, does encourage by rewarding and by sort of deriding any suggestion to the opposite, that the things that are worth having in life are material things. That is the whole basis of our economic system. And the base of our economic system is the basis of our entire world. So anything that suggests that there is something more to life than the gathering and experiencing of sensory perceptions based on material goods and ingesting things is at least not encouraged.
So I don't disagree with you, but my point is less that there is going to be suppressed entirely by society, and more that if there was a case that was very compelling, that it would sort of rise to the top, because these sort of things that challenge it, our society does ridicule the sort of belief in the immaterial, or the belief that immaterial is more important than material. It does ridicule that. But to the same effect, that means that when something seeks to sort of challenge that belief, it is often spread about fairly well. I mean, we hear all the time of sort of miracles that sort of go against science. And science can't explain this. Science can't explain that. Science says we can't move faster than light, but maybe we can. So time travel. These stories we latch onto, right? That my point is that there's not a conspiracy to keep that down. Yeah, societally, like, it is suppressed, but that it's suppressed to a level where if there's not really evidence for it, then it doesn't rise to the top. If there is evidence for it, then it's going to shoot right to the top and everyone's going to know about it, right?
I agree with you on that. But as we've said before, proof or disproof of the concept of past life regression, memories from past lives, is nothing to do with, essentially, proof of reincarnation and spirituality. The other thing I would say is that the very notion that you require proof for something, proof that you can show to another person, is, I would argue, a fundamentally flawed concept, because you could never prove to me, for example, that you're conscious. You could never prove to me that the objective world exists when I'm not observing it.
Yeah.
There are loads of things that just are untouchable by that theory. And those things that are fundamentally not provable with physical material equipment might be the most real things in the world, and science would never be able to figure that out.
Yeah, that's fine. So again, I'm not trying to say that you need to prove that reincarnation is real or not real. I have no real stance on reincarnation. I don't think, oh, it's absolutely not true. I'm just like, I don't really know, because I don't know, and I can't really know. What strikes me as odd is the sort of standing up and saying reincarnation, here is the evidence to show that people remember these things from past lives. You're using science in a way that science can't really be, under the way that science should be used. You're not using it correctly. You're using a tool for the wrong purpose, right? You're like trying to cut a steak with a spoon.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, look, you shouldn't be using a spoon for that. You're saying I can't cut the steak? No, cut the steak, just use a knife, right? Like, if you can absolutely believe in reincarnation, you can absolutely think that that these memories are past lives. But when you try and shove that into a scientific framework, and you have to then disregard parts of how we sort of go about proving things empirically, that's what I take issue with. The misuse of sort of, I guess, the scientific method.
Yeah, the trouble is that we're not taught. We're taught, especially in the UK at least, we're not taught, for example, at any point that there are things that are fundamentally not provable. We're taught scientific supremacy to a certain extent. At least science teaches us scientific supremacy because it is so incredibly effective.
Yeah.
And there's no, yeah, there's no educational system that go, that we're taught RE, we're taught religious education that goes, this is what a bunch of people believe, this is what these people believe, and this is how it differs, and this is the wars they've had.
But we're not taught philosophy, really.
Yeah, exactly. We're not taught philosophy, we're not taught metaphysics, and we're not taught that those subjects even really exist or are worth pursuing unless you, through your own volition, happen to pursue them. Mm. And that is because I believe, to a certain extent, that because we live in a sort of industrial complex as a society, i.e., countries are at war with each other, effectively, even in peacetime, because they're developing technology that they can sell to each other and get each other's money and advance beyond each other. That is a form of industrial war. The only things that matter to countries, and by extension, the education systems that countries provide, are things that forward the physical, material, the physical material prospects of that country. And we don't have, for example, any, this is something that there's an organization working on that my dad knows really well, called the Good Country Project, which is trying to change the measure of how a country's doing based on the happiness of the citizens. Mm-hmm. And if you were doing that, materialism would probably begin to crumble, because any kind of, like, the basis of your society might become therapy as opposed to amassing material goods.
Drugs. Yeah.
Well, drugs, no. I mean, yes, sure. Okay, you would pump, right. Yeah, so you would pump
what
your...
What would make an opium addict the happiest, like, happier than anything? Okay, so opium's very easy to get addicted to, but what would make an opium addict happier than anything?
Well,
free and all and constant access to opium.
Yeah, but as soon as the opium supply didn't come, it would make them very unhappy.
And so you start a war.
Right.
And then you take the opium.
God.
You see?
Yeah.
And this is the thing. Opium addicts would make perfect soldiers because they just want that opium.
Didn't we do this to the Chinese? I think we exported a bunch of opium to mess with the Chinese.
Yeah, probably.
The UK did. Yeah. That's not very nice.
That's us. Good old Great Britain. Love just messing with countries and seeing what happens.
Anyway, Corey, past lives. I apologize for my my little lecture there.
No, I liked it. No, this is the thing. I just want to say that I'm not trying to say that I don't believe in reincarnation. I actually think it's a very nice and interesting idea. I just don't really care much about the idea of reincarnation because I can't prove it or disprove it. I can't experience it. You know what I mean? Until I'm at the point at the end of my life, really, or unless I'm going to meditate and stuff and like...
I don't have time to do. Remember that old saying?
What I'm saying is I don't have time to get enlightened, you know?
Remember that old saying? You one must meditate for 20 minutes a day. If you don't have 20 minutes a day, you must meditate for an hour a day.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I say I don't have time, I don't want to meditate. I don't want to reach enlightenment. That seems like boring.
You're still
right?
On your outward face.
I'm just saying that being the Buddha seems like, you know, or being a Buddha rather, just doesn't seem like, you know, seems pretty, ugh.
Sounds like a brain talking.
Yeah, that's fine.
Sounds like an ego talking.
That's fine. I'm good with that, you know? No, I just mean like, look, ultimately, if I'm going to get reincarnated anyway, there's not much point wasting my life trying to figure out the ins and outs of reincarnation. I should just enjoy what I'm doing now.
You can do it in the next life.
And then
life,
do it again. Yeah, I'll put it off.
Yeah,
you know, reincarnation allows for eternal procrastination, which is really all that I want, right?
I wish we had like a monk on the program to talk to you about this. I can't do this for you.
Like, I'm fully kidding.
I know.
So yeah, Jamp, you mentioned imaginary friends, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. So I did read a study. I read multiple studies, but I read one study about imaginary friends and past lives. It was actually imaginary playmates. And past, oh, what's the word?
Ghosts.
No. past, I think it was individuals or past past identities. Imaginary playmates and past identities. And I know that the researcher was trying to have fun there because that's IP and PI.
Ippy.
Yeah, no, as in so they shorten it entire.
Hey, that is fun. You're right.
They That's shorten really no, fun. But they shorten it throughout the entire paper. So they're talking about IPs, imaginary playmates, and PIs, past identities, and it's very confusing to skim read it because it's so difficult to tell those two apart.
Ips and pies.
So, essentially, they sort of concluded. They looked around the world and sort of saw. Okay, right. So in the US, there are sort of 66% of kids. Have imaginary friends if you're using the broadest range, whereas in India, a lot of your kids have sort of memories of past lives. They were trying to see if that there was a sort of cross-cultural comparison there between past lives and memories of past lives and imaginary friends. And it seems that there is. So it happens roughly the same times, roughly the same time of onset. And one of the explanations that they've got for this is kind of that when they don't spend time alone, when kids spend time alone, they start to come up with sort of play by themselves, and that's where imaginary friends come from. And also it's kind of at the time where kids are discerning what is real from what is reality from what isn't reality, and they do that through conversation with adults, and so they find out that things are and aren't real, and so they basically start to fit their framework in the world of the world into the framework of reality that they discern from through conversation. You know, if someone's playing, like I think an example here is like if a kid is playing and they're like, I'm going to the moon, an adult might be like, oh, you'd go in a rocket ship. And the kid knows, okay, you need a rocket ship to get to the moon.
Yeah.
Right?
Ah. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. Childhood development is really cool. But also they point out that there's sort of cultural differences that lead to sort of changes here. So in India, there's very few cases reported of kids having imaginary friends. One reason for that could be that kids in India just aren't alone as much as kids in North America. But also the fact that apparently when a kid is talking to someone in that sense, it's more likely to be seen as an invisible person or an invisible entity rather than an imaginary friend, right? So the concept of imaginary friend doesn't exist as strongly as it in India as it does in America. Yeah, like some sort of spiritual entity that exists, but is not visible.
Right.
The kid is interacting with. In the same way that people think their kids are talking to ghosts or seeing ghosts when they're like, oh, I see someone in the room. Yeah. That kind of thing. That is apparently more common in India than it is in the US. So those are just the studies that made. The link is in the description for this study. It's quite interesting.
If you want to give it a read. Like India. Got it.
It's more people there.
Yeah.
More ghosts.
Exactly.
So there are some more issues with the sort of even the best evidence for past lives. And it's basically this person talking about the issues with Stevenson's work. So quote here. Even if he claimed not to have definitive data supporting the reincarnation hypothesis, Stevenson seemed to have a preconceived idea, and he just sought the way to confirm it. He may have been guilty of confirmation bias. Essentially, this is a paper about the how unethical. Do you remember we were talking about past life regression therapy? Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is a paper about how unethical that is. Very unethical because it can harm people, and also it's not based on evidence. Awful. Maybe we'll do an entire episode on that because it really annoyed me when I found out about it. But yeah, so this is just it talks about the issues with Stevenson's research. One here it says, the main problem with Stevenson's research then is that his hypotheses are not falsifiable. Essentially, you can't disprove them. And that's the issue with pseudoscience, right? You can't disprove it definitively. Whatever you do, you can move the goalposts and be like, oh, well, there's this and that. Like in the same way that Luke, you're saying there's stuff that can't be proven by science. If you reincarnation. Well,
the stuff that science assumes that can't be proven.
Well, yeah. What I'm saying is reincarnation can't be proven by science if it is sort of immaterial. It's sort of an immaterial concept, right? Basically, the point here is that if you create an idea of a thing that is immaterial, that is non-measurable, and you say this thing exists. And you know it exists everywhere, and it happens, but you can't prove it because science can't measure it in any way because it is completely out with the bounds of science. That's kind of what's going on here, right? It's the same way as you can't disprove that God exists because if you say, oh, God is everywhere, okay, well, why can't we measure God? Because God is all powerful, but then why isn't God? Because God is above us. What?
So many rules.
Right. Fine. Okay, you can't prove God is real, but you can't disprove God is real because you'll just make up. It's like playing a game with a kid where you're like, oh, I win. They're like, nope, I made a new rule. You can't win because you broke the rule.
Yeah, it's so infuriating. It's just my cousin does that all the time with table football. I just want to like shut up,
right? And that's what it's like, Abby, talking to a Christian.
You're watching this in your future. You are terrible at table football, though. You are the worst. You don't want to accept it.
No, but the point there is, right, obviously, if you're trying to prove something that is not necessarily provable by science, basically, if you assume something is true, but that assumption can't be proven by science, you're basically kind of, you can't really use it in a using the scientific method.
That is what science does. So how is that different?
So another point here is that this is a key point that I had to leave out. Stevenson's ideas, the things that Stevenson comes up with, you can't use them to predict anything, right? Yeah. They're not reliable, right? So you can't. There's not enough consistency there to predict. Okay, if someone has birthmarks, then X. It's just in some cases this, in some cases that. We're not really sure X, Y, Z. There's no reliability within the results. There's no way to use that to predict what's going to happen in the future.
Okay.
It's just a bunch of stuff that happens maybe, and I've come up with this idea that links it all, but it doesn't link it all in any way that it's predictable whatsoever. It's just, I think they're linked.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
So that's why
that's the difference.
That's the difference between that. Because science makes assumptions, right?
Yeah.
Like, for example, I can make the assumption that, I'm going to mess something up. I can make the assumption that if I flick this switch, the light is going to go off, right?
That's not an assumption.
Well, okay. So there's, I understand.
Oh, goodbye, light.
My point is that I understand that if I flick that switch, the light will go off, right? And the reason that I think that is because there's electricity coming from the mains running up through the light, and if I flip that switch, it stops the electric current from passing through the circuit, lighting up the LEDs, right?
Yeah.
I understand the science of that. Now, these are all based on assumptions. Right.
Yeah.
But those assumptions allow for me to turn that light on and use it in a predictable manner.
If when you flicked the switch, the light didn't turn off, you would have to conclude your assumptions were incorrect. Or your assumptions may be incorrect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe incorrect. And then I'd have to try and find, okay, well, why? Turns out, it's not plugged in. Well, my assumption is then no longer, incorrect. But then if I get to a point, you're right. If I get to a point where, okay, me flicking the switch, I've tried every avenue. Me flicking the switch seems to have no correlation to the light, has no cause-effect sort of relationship with the light. It's just been coincidence all this time. I'd have to come up with a new model, right?
Yeah.
But thus far in human history, when you flick a light switch, usually the light will turn on. It's fairly predictable. So that's why science is useful. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I'm on a science podcast. I don't doubt science is useful. I just like playing with it.
No, I know. I agree. So yeah, I don't have an issue with reincarnation. I'm not poking fun at that. I think it's interesting and you can't really prove it wrong. I more take issue with, and I'm having a bit of a laugh about, the fact that you're taking this sort of thing that isn't necessarily provable by science and sort of cramming it into the scientific method and ignoring some things and focusing only on other things to make it seem like it is valid. When it's not really a valid use of the scientific method, because you're not trying to, like, you know, whenever they flick their light switch and the light doesn't turn on, they just say, oh, this is one of those cases where it doesn't do that, but I'm still right. Maybe. No, you're not. If the light switch does not turn on, then you got to come up with another idea.
Do you not think there would be any way of designing? So if I gave you $200,000, and I said, right, Corey, I'd like you to, maybe it'd be more than $200,000, you've got a lot of flights to catch. Yeah. I'd like you to go around the world, and I would like you to interview people who claim to have past lives, and I want you to gather as much data. Do you think there would be a way of gathering specific enough data with enough time and resources to form at least an opinion one way or the other?
No.
Right.
No.
That's disappointing.
Well, put it this way, there are a lot of people. A lot of people have died. There are a lot of lives. And unless we go by unless we take the idea that you need to be entirely specific and entirely correct, then there's no way to prove it, right? So if we say, okay, for this to be believable, you need to be specific and correct, right? There needs to be specificity, and you can't be incorrect about any of the details that you give. So, okay, I interview a bunch of people, right? Like 100, I think a 1,000 people, right?
Yeah.
10,000 people. And what I would need to have that sort of proven one way or the other is a significant number of those to have completely uninfluenced, which again would wipe out like a ton of that 10,000, right? like children that have not been influenced by their parents talking about past lives of people that they don't know. And even then, if we wipe out half that 10,000, let's say 5,000 of those people are kids who are talking about past lives, who haven't been influenced by parents, all this and that, and they're talking about details. If they're not specific, then that's 5,000 people. All I need to do is find 5,000 people that died in a, that had a similar job, that died in a similar way to what this kid said. So it needs to be more specific than that. But then you start getting to the point of, well, no kid is going to be talking that specifically about this, right? They're not. It's just, it is frustrating because it is not falsifiable. You can't prove it to be untrue because you can always come up with another reason for it. But proving that it is true would be conceptually fairly simple.
Yeah.
If, you know, provided the assumption that, like, you know, you can remember things fully and you can be specific and correct about those things. But if that's not where it is, if, say, past life memories are a real thing, but actually they're just hazy, then there's no real way to prove it, really.
Mm.
Unless we do kind of like studies in the brain. But actually, we have done studies in the brain. I forgot to mention this. We've done studies in the brain, and apparently it is similar. People who are more susceptible to misremembering things, essentially, or having issues with, it's called, what's it called? Yeah, people who have got issues with sort of source errors, basically remembering where information has come from, they are more likely to have memories of past lives. So there's a test that you can do where you show people a bunch of names, and then you show them a list of, a little while later, you show them a list of names that they have seen, that they were shown before, mixed in with famous names, mixed in with names that they've not seen. And you've got to tell, and they've got to basically discern which of these names are famous names. Oh, from, yeah, famous names.
You can, oh, right.
You've got to discern which of these names are famous names. And they can fully get it wrong, sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
They can be like, oh, yeah, like this is a famous person, but actually it was just one of the names they were shown before. Because they remember that they remember it, but they can't remember where it came from.
Yeah.
Right, in the same sense that someone that thinks they've got a past life, I remember hearing about a pilot on TV in the World War II. Oh, that was me. I can't remember where that came. It was me, right? There's also you know, some studies on the brain where it's like parts of, if something feels like it's coming from outside of yourself, if it comes from a part of your brain where it feels like it's coming from outside of the self, it will then be a trip, or it feels sort of like more distant from the memories of the self, the sort of sense of self, then it could be attributed to a past life in some people. Like some people are like, oh, that doesn't feel like a memory that I had, past life, or a piece of information that feels separate from the self.
That sounds similar to the sort of deja vu hypothesis.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so that's the thing. It's the same thing as being like, oh, deja vu. It's really because you made a mistake and time skipped back. I mean, you can't prove that I'm wrong.
Yeah, man.
You can't.
That's it.
But
I didn't know we knew what that was about. That's really interesting. And, no, thank you very much.
You gotta stop doing that, man. But you know what I mean, right? Like, if I could say that deja vu is time travel, I could say,
yeah,
I could say any of these things, and you can't prove it wrong, but you also can't really prove that it's true. And so it exists in this limbo of people being like continuing to study it and continuing to do these studies that are honestly just almost begging the question, assuming that it is true, and that's the way that the studies are built,
right? Yeah.
With these, under the assumption that it's true. And it's just frustrating. So instead of focusing on things that, or focusing on studying these things in a way that would be useful, or focusing on things that are more useful, we continue to do these studies where we can't prove anything one way or the other. It's essentially just building up a database of interviews with people that say they remember past lives, when like ultimately we could look into this and be like, oh, it's probably just kids going through play, and this is how kids do it, and it's misattributed by parents. There's all these explanations that make complete sense, but instead of like trying to find a way to sort of prove trying to find a way to prove reincarnation in a sort of far better, more material way, we're doing it this way that really doesn't seem to hold any water already. There's no way that you can pull these sort of past life memories back from the brink that they're on of, this is just human development, right? It would take a lot of work to do that.
Yeah.
And I would say nigh impossible to prove at this point that all of these cases thus far of past life memories are actually past lives memories of past lives, and not just the ways that kids develop normally.
Mm.
You know, in the same way that saying like, okay, imaginary friends for kids, yeah, they're just people that are on a different dimension. It'd be the same thing as studying that, you know, in my mind. And it's frustrating because it seems like we could do this in a better way.
Yeah
we could do it in a better way, but you also think fundamentally not possible either. We could study it, but we still would never be able to prove it.
I think we, yeah, I we might, I, in Mike, I don't think we can prove it just this way, but I think that we could, it is interesting to look at least.
It's a real shame because I've, this is not an episode about reincarnation, it's an episode about past lives, but it's very interesting seeing the frustrations you have with the data collected on past lives and the arguments you make as to why they're rubbish. Those, interestingly, from what I've seen and read from people, for example, in sort of Buddhist teachings, they would actually, in terms of your speaking on like how you come up with concept of self and the way your mind is, like that's slightly less me because it comes from an area of the brain that's more attributed to the outside or whatever. That would actually, I think, be a really interesting discussion when talking about the concept of reincarnation as opposed to past lives. Because past lives, as far as we understand it, memory is stored in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Although there may be Buddhist people who disagree with you, but memory, as far as we understand it, is stored in the brain. And then, in terms of reincarnation, the materialist view goes, well, when you're dead, you're dead. We can see your body is dead. We can burn it. We can put it in the ground and it rots away. And that sort of ignores certain other things and is based on some very serious unprovable assumptions that are heavily flawed. So it's very interesting. I think that the reincarnation aspect to it would actually probably not be too... It is unprovable, absolutely, but you can logic it out in a way that is not... It's not flawed. It's not provable, but there aren't any glaring flaws in it.
Yeah. And another... You mentioned something that's really interesting here because you say that... sort of memory stored in the brain, the sort of physical aspect there. This is what's interesting to me about the sort of birthmarks being scars from past lives, is that if the sort of reincarnation, the past lives are spiritual, right? It's the soul.
Yeah.
How does that then affect the birthmark on the body, the physical, right?
There would be some. Like, someone would give you a reason. Your essence is, yeah.
Sure, yeah, there's some. Your essence can permutate throughout your body. Whatever, shut up. No. sorry, but like, it's a kid making up the rules of a game.
Yeah.
Like, if you have to, this is why Occam's Razor bothers me, the way that people understand it, because you're then, for me, when I say, well, then why would you have, why would the birthmarks be scars if it's reincarnation, if it's like the bodies are completely separate, you then need to come up with a way that these bodies are connected or whatever. And then you could say, oh, well, souls can have memories of their lives. And you're making an assumption there that the souls exist, that this is how it happens. Like, so frustrating. Like, ugh. Like, it's fun to do this, right? And it's fun to do this, I think, with lore and with like fiction. But when it comes to reality, making this up in a way that is not provable is, I think, ultimately pointless. It can be fun, but it's pointless. I see it as not as valuable or valid as philosophy, which seeks to understand things that are not necessarily provable. Philosophy is a way of proving things using logic outside of science.
Yeah.
Right? And obviously science can come into philosophy, all of that, but there are so many like sort of philosophical ideas that prove things without using the scientific method at all. Right?
Yeah.
And that is valuable. I think that's interesting. These things exist entirely outside of that, which is what frustrates me to no end.
Clearly.
Yeah. Clearly. But to finish this off, I do want to talk about something. So maths, right?
Yes.
So past lives, reincarnation, right? There are lots of people on the planet, 7 billion, and there were fewer people on the planet before, right?
Maths.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if there's a bigger number now and a fewer number before, where did all the bloody souls come from? Where did all the people come from?
This bugs me no end because I don't understand if consciousness is like, how does it work? Does it subdivide? Are we all the same person? What's going on, man? So confusing.
Well, this makes me think of, and here's an answer for you. This makes me think of the egg. And we could think of it the way that we think we've thought of electrons. Electrons are thought of at some point, right? There's the idea that there's sort of like only one electron.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and it exists each individual electron that we think is an individual electron is just the same electron existing at different points and places of time, right? Like in the fabric of reality, the electron is just popping into existence because it exists outside of time, right? You could say the same for consciousness, right? If you've heard the story of the egg. I've sent it to both of you. In fact, it's linked in the description. There's a Kurzgesagt video that is the story of the egg. It's really interesting. Someone basically wakes up after dying in a car crash, and they see this sort of hazy, sort of godlike figure, and they talk for a while, and it essentially comes to the point of the person understanding that, I won't spoil the ending for you entirely, but the person comes to understanding that they are every single person that's ever existed. They are in a point between lives right now, but they're going to go back into another life. They are every single person, and they have been every single person, they will be every single person, and it's for some idea. It gets to a point at the end, but all of humanity, every single life is one single consciousness. And I find that interesting, and that would be an interesting way to describe, to sort of say, oh, this is how past lives or reincarnation works, that everyone is just one. We are one consciousness experiencing everything in completely different ways. I find that incredibly interesting, and I really like that story. People that do past lives don't seem to not even think about something like this. Just the raw maths of, well, how does 6 billion people become 7 billion people if there's only a set number of souls or consciousnesses or whatever, or new ones just.
Well, they're not saying this one. It could be, like you say, one soul experiencing all the lives, but it's a specific order it's experiencing them in.
Sure, yeah.
But then in a timeless world, they're experiencing them all at the same time, but when they're bound inside of time, they're experiencing them one by one, and that's the previous one. Why that has some kind of material, chain of cause and effect that causes you to have scars, I have no idea.
But then it's usually someone that's died recently. So what that would mean is there need to be a line of people, sometimes through families and sometimes not, that have that, like, one life leading to another, to another, to another, and then looping back at some point and doing a whole line again. Could you know?
Yeah.
Well, they got forever, haven't they?
I think they do have forever. But then again, like, that is, you're then taking a scientific framework to try and prove this timeless, outside of our own reality and understanding, consciousness that can jump through time.
Do we know of anyone who's had past life memories from the future?
And why wouldn't that happen?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Maybe kids
doesn't
that are
have
making
to go one way.
Maybe kids that are making stuff up about being, I don't know, like monsters or spacemen are actually just from the future.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
You heard it here first, guys. Corey's hypothesis.
No, come on.
New working theory.
It's Jamp's hypothesis, really, though. No, it's Jamp's idea, and Jamp is right. Sorry. The way that you can tell, I feel like the way that you can tell that a lot of these things are kind of made up by humans more than just sort of being, being observed by humans, is that often the limits of them are well within the limits of the human imagination. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we study science, often things stretch the bounds of our imagination.
Yeah, like electrons aren't really there when you're not looking at them.
Stop that. Okay.
That's
I will never stop looking at them.
Oh dear. Okay. Deal with that now.
No, like really, quantum, like if you look at quantum mechanics, right? Quantum physics, if you're studying that, that is stretching the bounds of human imagination, which is where I'm like, okay, this is probably not just made up by some guy.
Yeah.
Because it is difficult for us to comprehend. Whereas the idea of past lives, it very much is sequentially, you just follow through. It's what reincarnated.
I was one person, and now I'm this person.
Because we experience time as a cause effect, A to B. That's how past lives are. Because, it's just frustrating that it feels like a very sort of close-minded way of being open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
But that is the sides of past lives as I've managed to sort of find it. What do you guys think? Any thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for my next life.
Wow, geez.
There's nothing wrong with this one. I just want to know what comes next.
What if all three of us next season the same soul?
Yeah,
and that's why we make a podcast.
I think that's probably true, but we're also everyone else, so we're not making a podcast with everyone. So that doesn't make sense.
Just a reminder, me.
I wonder. I hope that in the space between, that I am the consciousness's favorite.
What? But you're the consciousness, Corey.
Yeah, I know. But like of all the, I hope that mine is the favorite one.
When we're pulled out of this,
yeah,
this reality, and we're like part, and we remember all the lives. Because like if you're, Corey was my favorite.
Because if you're Hitler and Obama and stuff, you'd be like, well, Hitler's my least favorite way of being, like, you know, a living being. But Corey was my favorite.
Yeah,
really liked Corey.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's me.
it's
me.
It's not weird because it's you, but you're currently you. But when you're not you, if you're still thinking like you, then that's weird.
Well, I'm not thinking like me. I'm outside of me. I'm just like, that me was my favorite me.
Mm.
You know, it's like cells in your body competing against each other.
That, isn't that called cancer?
I think it's time for the quick fire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun.
Past
life edition.
Yay! So you know the rules of the quick fire quiz. I will ask one question between two of you. The first person to buzz in with the correct answer after I finished asking the question wins. You guys got it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jap, what's your buzzer?
I don't know. Where I die.
Jeez, that is macabre. Yeah. Luke, what's your buzzer?
I used to be an elephant.
Okay. We haven't even talked about animals.
No, it's too much. So, my question for you today is...
Do dogs go to heaven?
At the University of Virginia, what does DPS stand for?
I used to be an elephant.
Luke.
Department of Paranormal Sciences. Paranormal Phenomena.
No, Luke.
I don't know.
Well...
Department of...
Give it a go. Anything.
Department of past.
No.
Department of.
Okay. So let me make it a little bit easier.
Yeah. Sure.
It is the division of P studies.
The division of past studies.
No.
Division of para.
The division.
Oh, flip. What's it called? Perceptual studies. Yes!
Well done, Luke. You won with absolutely no hints whatsoever. Congratulations.
Yay! What do I win?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Oh.
So we would like to thank...
Well, at least win another life.
No.
No.
Everyone gets one of those. They're a dime a dozen, Luke.
And you're all me, so it's fine.
It's very self-centered. So
someone has to be at the end.
But is altruism.
Wait. I just realized someone has to be the last life.
No. Got forever.
That just starts again. So,
yeah.
We'd like to thank all of our patrons, but we would also like to very much thank FinTZ. FinTZ?
For this whole entire episode.
Yeah, this idea. And if you want to, as I said, if you want to give us a topic that we have to do, go to our Patreon and join our Boaty McBoatface tier, because that's what you can do with that. But you can also get other stuff on our Patreon. You can, you know, vote for topics, you can submit topics, you can get bonus episodes and all that stuff. It's really cool. So go there. And before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producers Ashley Muller and FinTZ. And also thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a contact at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at Knocker everywhere.
You can follow me at Jumpkin everywhere.
You can follow me at Luke Cutforth everywhere.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I think Cara is currently transitioning between lives.
I'm the going.
I'm the going.
I'm the going.
I'm the going.
See you in the next life.
Bye.